Welcome to the Minibate Gang Podcast, episode 235. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, morning.
Graham Fickens from up north.
Yeah, back after a two-week hiatus. Good to be here.
And Phil Wilson.
Jell-O?
No. We're not doing any play on words this morning.
Okay, good morning.
Phil, you are just too humorous.
Guten Morgen.
Yeah.
So who went down? Oktoberfest, baby.
There you are.
Oh.
Happy pheasant opening.
Yeah. Hey, who went down to mini demo? Because I couldn't make it.
Graham and I were there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Graham held his usual position in the bar.
Oh my God, I'm still recovering from that surly beer. What is in that stuff, man? Those 16-ounce cans. Oh. I'm talking dangerous.
I decided, I went inside and actually, watched the demos. And I always leave the social aspect of mini demo to Graham. He does it so well. So.
They have demos?
I know. It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Well, so what was the most interesting, Phil? Which company really kind of intrigued you the most?
It's hard to say. I guess I was probably most intrigued with Dash, only because that's the sort of thing that I sort of geek out on, being able to customize a dashboard to monitor different websites or, use different data and set it up to customize it yourself and, adding it to make it a little more personalized and things like that. So I enjoyed Dash probably the most.
How about Approve?
Approve was good. They probably had the best presentation.
Really? Okay, good.
Simply because they'd spent a lot of time rehearsing the bit. So to set up, here's the pain we're trying to address. So I think their presentation was probably the best.
I'm kind of liking their tagline, PayPal for business expenses. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, it's basically the ability to grant everybody that needs access to the business card, access to the business card. So without having to have, multiple copies of cards floating around. So it's great. It was good. I liked, I think I would have liked the Bonsai app had they been able to overcome their technical inability to get it on the screen. This was, I think, from what I could tell from the audience, this was the perfect example of bring all the adapters you can muster.
Why don't they just use a Chromecast? Wouldn't that be the best idea?
I don't know if you can. Yeah, I suppose. But
if you've got a web app, for instance, it's in a Chrome tab, and you just broadcast that.
You would think. But I don't think. It wasn't a Chrome. The app was not a native projector. They had to use the projector.
Yeah.
No, they just needed to bring their lightning cable and plug into the projector, and they didn't have the right cables. But it was sort of a mess. But
Bring your cables. Remember
yes,
that.
Yes, remember no to kidding. Bring your cables and rehearse your stuff. Make sure everything works before the event starts. So
what a venue though, huh, Phil? That's my new favorite venue.
I like that so much better than Aria, because it's it's a lot less echoey. It's very the mingling outside does not creep into the theater, so it's easy to sort of separate. But It was a full house.
How many seats in the theater?
I asked because I was shocked when I walked into that theater. It's a really nice, it's called Riverview Theater. And I asked somebody, I said, this looks like it might be like hold 600. And somebody turned around and said 625.
Oh. Yep.
And I mean, they're really nice new seats, and they gradually kind of go up. It's a really good,
it's a nice theater.
It looks like everybody's got a good view.
It's just What we would consider, a great theater, what everybody would say was the old days theater, but it was just, a larger screen. It was, comfortable seating and, very much the old vibe of a theater. And it was a great place.
You know what's funny about that? Do you remember that the impetus for starting Minivate, when we were standing around, the four of us were talking to Dan Grigsby and Garrick Van Buren, and it was so freaking loud at O'Gara's pub.
O'Gara's garage,
And you couldn't hear anything. You know, here are all these people up there trying to demo. You couldn't hear them. Yeah, nobody was paying attention. There's maybe 30 people standing in front of the stage and then 400 drinking and talking and, you know, sort of missed the point.
And, you know, the events at Intermediate Arts, that was pretty nice. That was a step up because, you know, you were actually separated from that. But that wasn't as comfortable. This was by far the most comfortable. You know, when we were at St. Thomas, when they did a couple of mini demos at St. Thomas, that was pretty nice. Yeah. Downtown. That was pretty nice, but I don't think it had the capacity. And I really liked this venue. This was a good spot. Yeah, and I grabbed dinner over at Riverview Cafe, just a kitty corner from it beforehand.
Yeah, so. That cafe and wine bar is a very cool place.
That's right. And I saw you. You were hanging with the VIPs there.
Well, yeah. Native X had a little pre-party that they invited some folks to. And,
nice.
And that was kind of fun. Got to chat with a few folks, Michael Gorman, and of course Rob Weber was hosting it. And just a whole bunch of other folks. There were a couple new guys I ran into one guy that came to town from San Francisco because he was told he should come check out the Minneapolis tech scene. He's got a storage startup out there.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and the VC Icon Ventures, which used to be El Dorado, recommended that he check out the Twin Cities. Of course, there's a lot of storage talent here, and you know, so he's probably got ideas about recruiting people since he just did a venture capital raise out there. And I met some other people I didn't know. The new council guys have a new associate who I met. His first name's Andy, I believe, and that was quite fun over there. And I got to meet the owner of the cafe and wine bar, who's a really interesting dude. And that little neighborhood there is really cool. My wife actually grew up in that neighborhood, and she used to go to the Riverview Theater as a kid. I mean, you know, like 8 or 10 years old, she saw her first movie there. I was talking to people who live in the neighborhood there who were at Mini Demo, and they said, yeah, it's a really great theater. The neighborhood, you know, doesn't hassle you. There's plenty of street parking. And that lobby, it's like right out of the 50s. There's these old lamps and stuff. And, you know, it is. It's like stepping back in time.
That's funny. So, yeah, my dad used to go there back in the 40s.
Really? It's that old, huh?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, it's been around a long time. So yeah, good thing they put new seats in.
Yeah, well, that's about all they've had to do, I think. I mean, they've kept the place up, but other than that, I don't think it's different from, you know, decades ago.
You know, I personally like it when they leave the theater pretty much as is. You know, they did that total renovation of the Uptown Theater, and it just doesn't have the same vibe anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if you guys have been to the Uptown Theater lately. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, it's all modernized. Inside.
I know. It's tough because it's, you know, on the one hand, they've really stepped up the number of exclusive screenings they're doing as well. And they need to get more people in there. And I'm sure that's, and plus now they're competing with that other theater that's like two blocks away in Uptown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, the Lagoon, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a horrible theater, but anyway.
I'm sorry, before we bail off of Mini Demo, I did also, I personally enjoyed TrackIF as well, if you want to check out that app. Well, I think we'll be sure that there's a link in the show notes to all of the presenters.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I heard Doug Berg wasn't there for that. I didn't see Doug, but I heard at the pre-party that he was out in the Bay Area doing some calling on some big money guys, I guess. So we'll see where that might go.
Well, yeah. We should get our guest on because he's going to be speaking this morning. And so that would be a good thing.
He's at the Block Ram Inn.
Yeah, he's going to.
So we're going to warm him up.
So we're going to warm him up, and we'll just briefly talk about the Coco Open House, the Coco Uptown, which, by the way, three of us were there, and then all of a sudden Phil and I were standing outside, and I thought I was going to get mugged because another guy came up. Tim Elliott was going in. So
no.
So Graham was there?
Yeah,
oh, yeah. He was there. I had to bolt, though. I had to bolt after about 45 minutes or so to go to the mini analytics pre-party out in Eden Prairies.
See the social butterfly world.
Oh, my God. It's been a week, you know. Yeah.
It is.
And then you got all the stuff going on today. And
let's get Don on the
get him on. So what we're going to talk about is really kind of what they're up to. One of the things about this Coco Uptown was the fact that it's in an area that's just exploding and it's being gentrified like crazy. Lots of new lofts and everything else. And of course, Uptown's always been hot, but it seems to be really getting much hotter. So it'll be interesting to see what the uptake has been on that already.
The uptake on Uptown?
On the uptake on Uptown. Don, are you on?
I am indeed. Can you hear me?
Yes. Good morning, Don Ball.
Good morning.
How are you?
Hey, Don.
Don Ball, co-founder of Coco, the co-working empire.
That's right. That's right.
Can we possibly get a little more alliteration in there, Phil?
Did you? Right. Yeah, exactly. Did you ever think that when you started the St. Paul, the lower town location, that you would be in three locations and basically renovating buildings?
Not right away. No. At first I think we wondered more like whether we had made a big mistake.
Yeah, what the hell are we thinking?
Typical thing entrepreneurs go through, you know, it's like you have these high days and then you have these really low days.
Right? It's true. But, you know, but now that I said that, I think I'm actually recalling with each of these spaces, including Uptown, having that sense of, you know, after you committed and after you open the doors, you go, wow, can we actually fill this thing? Especially remember the Grain Exchange, because that's such a huge cavern. And when we first got in there, we just only had the kind of that one raised deck area with some furniture on it and bought lucky for us, a half a dozen people sitting there on our first day. And I remember looking at the rest of that thinking, oh my gosh, this is a 5-year lease that we may come to regret. But we've since upped that. I think we've got options for 15 plus years on that one.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Well, but also look what's happened to the building with all the organizations coming in there too, because of you guys.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I think there's going to be a lot more of that. And maybe we'll even have a hand in that someday.
Oh, there you go. Cool.
There you go.
Well, so listen, I think that most of our listener knows about Coco, but just give us the quick 15-second, this is what Coco is, and then tell us a little bit about the decision to move to Uptown and some of the features of that new location.
Sure enough. So essentially Coco is an alternative work, I used to say space, now I almost say community, a work community. For people who otherwise would be working from home or the coffee shop or perhaps finding some other kind of arrangement. The central premise is that you pay on a monthly basis a subscription, which entitles you to use all the spaces, or you can kind of up the ante and get a dedicated private space that is in the midst of the community. And the benefits that you get besides just having a surface to put your laptop on and some Wi-Fi and some coffee is the kind of what I call deep networking that happens in the space. And you get to know a lot of people doing things that are similar to what you're doing, but also things that are different than what you're doing. And there's some good diversity of thought in the space as well. So for somebody having their own business or starting their own thing or just being an independent worker, you're constantly surrounded by really interesting and inspiring people. And that's what keeps you going.
Yeah. And there's kind of a serendipity factor, right? Where the people that work there, you know, run into people they would otherwise never meet or hear about cool things they'd, you know, never hear about at the coffee shop, right?
Yeah, true. I mean, you really, you don't have quite the same permission to socialize in a coffee shop as you would, in a co-working space. And I think also, you know, you might run into some of the same people that you see at conferences. But you know, the context is different. There's a little bit more space and kind of, you know, a little more of a relaxed atmosphere, so that when you do run into that person, you actually have a little bit of time, decompressed time to talk and to share ideas. Whereas, you know, in a conference in the hallway between the sessions, that's very productive, but you only get little snippets of time, and then there's that big gap from the when you talk to when you get the follow up. So I like to think that, you know, some people in the co-working world use the term accelerated serendipity, that just seems the rate at which these happy accidents occur seems to be somewhat accelerated.
Yeah.
So you started these, the first Coco location opened in Lower Town in St. Paul. Second was the Grain Exchange in downtown Minneapolis. So what was the impetus to move into Uptown? And then, you know, what have you done to the space to make it more Coco friendly?
Sure, sure. Well, the impetus, I mean, what really got us going was it was getting crowded at the Minneapolis space. There were some days, Wednesday seems to be a peak, but then we were noticing that the peak days were happening all over the week. And it was not that there wasn't literally a chair to grab, but being Minnesota, we kind of have bigger space bubbles. And so, you know, the fact that there were maybe a few too many people for comfort, you know, in kind of the general co-working areas made us think, boy, we should maybe do something to alleviate some pressure, but then also to perhaps, you know, meet people we hadn't run into yet who are sitting in other neighborhoods. So we chose Uptown in part because the landlords had approached us and said, we have this interesting building, have no idea if you'd be interested. So we went down and looked at it, and it was just a huge, basically cavern, you know, mostly underground.
With a garage door.
With a garage door. At least it looked like it was mostly underground, but then they showed us that up where there were some glass block windows, they showed us, but with some, by putting tape on the wall, actually how far the windows could be cut down, you know, so that basically it turns out that that one whole wall is like a walkout. And so when we saw that, it sparked our imagination. We said, wow, here's this space that's like a little bit of an underground bunker, but it has this lookout into a green courtyard. And then it has this kind of garage space at the end. We thought, yeah, maybe we could do something with this. And part of what we wanted to do as well, I mean, after you do the Grain Exchange, and, you know, for those of your listeners who've seen the pictures or been there, it's such an epic space, you know, that it leaves you scratching your head. How do you top that?
Right.
So the way we conceived of doing that was to go in just a completely different direction and create something that's a unique experience to the Grain Exchange. And the fact that it was a kind of a raw space allowed us to create some things that just we'd been yearning for in the Minneapolis space, but it's been too hard to accomplish, or some things that just hadn't existed yet. So the idea being that if you're a member of one location, you're a member of all of them. So you can take it, you can take advantage of these benefits, even no matter where you hang out most of the time. So we ended up coming up with things like a billiard room, a tap room, a theater. There's a patio space for members as well. You know, we ended up adding in all these features, you know, that that just really weren't available before.
And you guys debuted some kick-ass Wi-Fi there too.
That's pretty cool. Well, yeah, you know, the catch on that. So, Phil, what you're referring to is that Comcast has partnered with us to bring 1 gigabit fiber currently into the Minneapolis locations, and hopefully eventually into St. Paul. And so that's great. If you're wired, that's perfect.
Yeah.
If you're on Wi-Fi, there's some limitations in that it depends on what kind of wireless card you're running.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been very careful to tell members, like, you know, you might already be maxed out on your Wi-Fi, depending on what kind of card you have inside.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's
you,
there.
So you support the N networking standard. So if you've got a you know, latest greatest Mac, you're probably going to connect there much much faster than most places.
That's my understanding, is that the newer Macs have the best stuff.
Well, are you also going to drop, or maybe you already have, in those private booths, Ethernet, so you could get connected to Ethernet?
Well, actually, you know, you've caught me unawares. I believe those are wired, but I could be mistaken. Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Well, especially for demos, you know, if you're going to be using, you know, WebRTC is exploding onto the scene, which is browser-based audio, video, and screen sharing. And, you know, for demos, you don't want to do Wi-Fi if you're doing, you know, voice and presentation, or, you know, especially video.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
But that the thing that I loved about the space is, you know, you guys put this in your bullet points too about the movie theater, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. It's kind of relaxing. But then for presentations and pitches, and I thought, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, seriously, you know, our idea was you rent that whole back suite, and you entertain, you know, if it's prospective partners or clients or investors, you entertain them back there, and then you bring them into the pitch room. And you know, it's going to be, you guys saw it, it's still a little raw. It's going to have like velvet curtains around the, on the outside for sound, and just, it's going to be beautiful. And I think people are just going to be bowled over by that, you know, and you can really bring the focus to the front of the room in a different way than if you were in a conference room. So I already have a couple of people asking about doing that. And I hope, you know, people have some successful moments because they're using those kind of resources the right way.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say, so we have a space at the other end called the garage, which is kind of more of a raw space. And we're going to kind of theme it up a little bit. So it's really celebrating garage startups, of which we've had a few, you know, there's been a few in this, state, you know, with 3M and Medtronic. And print some graphics of famous startups. But you know, one of them cool. is in Northeast Minneapolis. There is the garage that, the guy who started Medtronic was in.
Yeah, Earl Bakken.
Yeah. Earl Bakken, yeah. And I found a really cool picture from the 50s of him. And he looks really young. And he's sitting there tooling away with all his electronics in his garage. And it's absolutely inspiring. So we're going to play that up. And our ideal scenario, if I hope somebody does this, is they come into that garage and they use it as a war room for a period of time. And then they go back to the other end of the space and they basically host, you know, let's say they bring in their senior management. And they basically pitch them on the ideas. And so using it, you're kind of using the full space to that effect, I think would be really cool.
Oh, that's
so what are the next plans? What's the next plans, Don? Are you eyeing any more spaces? Are you thinking about taking
it? Yeah, when are you going to come south of the river?
No, well, you know what I'm thinking of now is, I mean, yes, we're, you know, there's a lot of mayors of small suburbs approaching us saying, hey, do you want to come here? So we're, you know, we have a few things that we could look at, but I think making the suburban leap is going to be the scariest one for us because you just don't know who's out there and what the concentration is, and you don't want to spend a ton of money to find out that it's not as you know,
yeah, that there's five.
That's just like two guys show up. Yeah,
yeah,
that would be bad.
But you know the thing that I'm really excited about is and I'm starting to hunt around a little bit is the idea of buying a summer camp.
Ooh.
Like an old Boy Scout camp or something that you can renovate
and
turn it into like a hipster retreat. I use it as advice. But you know what I'm saying? Like you go there and it's going to be, you know, like a different kind of retreat. That's maybe a bit of a woodsy feel. But there's really good beer on tap and maybe different kinds of activities. I think it'd be really kind of fun. And then of course the real fun part would be what kind of content you have. You know, if people go for a week long retreat, maybe to work on their business or work on their ideas, you know, what do you do there? So that's kind of got me excited.
And that's a thing that writers have been doing for years. There's many writer retreats that, you know, give you the opportunity to take a month or 2 months or 3 months or whatever, and just get away to write, and with other writers. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Well, you know, the one thing too is Don, you and I talked about this a long time ago, but it was about having either people come in via Skype or having something akin to, you know, Google Authors or Google Talks, you know, where they bring people into offices to give a presentation and to chat with people there. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, that would be just so fabulous to be able to have smart people talk to startups.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without them having to get on a plane to come to Minneapolis. Huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we've started to do a little bit of that with our Google connection. We had using Hangouts basically. We had one where there was a couple of Googlers who had one had started their travel business, and the other one was somewhere up there in, I think, marketing for search for AdWords. But they were basically giving kind of a intro to marketing, you know, like from their perspective, an intro to marketing for startups. And it wasn't as well attended as I wanted. I think what happens is like when we put out the word, we get a lot of people saying, oh yeah, that sounds really good. And then comes the day of, you know, like if everybody is still available or if they remembered, you know, it's kind of like herding cats sometimes. But the general idea, I mean, it really worked, and the Googlers were great. They were dialing in from like DC and New York, But what does it matter, right? Because it's Hangout. So I think that idea, we could keep on doing that. And there's apparently like over 600 Googlers that are Minnesotans, expats. And so as part of this partnership, they put out word, and they, I guess at Google, they call it the Minnesota Mafia, apparently. It's like it's a strong enough contingent that people comment on it there, and it's a thing. But they said, hey, you know, who wants to help startups back home? And they heard from a bunch of them, and they said, yeah, would love to, if there's anything I can do, mentoring, or, you know, if I pass through town, I can stop at Coco and talk to people. That's great. So that's something that we're just kind of dipping into, but I'm pretty excited about, because I think people really do feel a strong affinity for their home state. And even though they're, you know, maybe in London or Silicon Valley or something like that, and they're doing some interesting work, but they still, you know, I think a lot of folks think about coming back eventually.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, Don, we're going to have to let you go, buddy, because it's 9:01 and you got to talk this morning.
Yeah. I have to get in the car and go over to Toby's Word Up conference.
Yeah. Well, really appreciate it.
Oh, that's right. I thought it was Blogger, but no, it is. It's Word Up today.
It's Word Up as well.
And both of them. That's right. They're competing. There's probably going to be a knife fight in the alley, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to know Eric Hansen.
That's
all right, you guys. Well,
listen, have a great time. Yeah. Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Congratulations on the growth.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks so much, you guys. See you later.
Take care.
Bye.
See ya.
Yeah, wow, so I gotta tell you, the whole Coco experience, going from, you know, I went from just having a drop-in membership of a once a week thing, mm-hmm. and now have a permanent campsite as HyperIQ continues to grow and we add people. It is the serendipity piece is it's amazing, the difference in just being there every day as opposed to once in a while. All of a sudden, it's like this. You know, garden opens up of opportunity with, you know, doing your business with other people at Coco. So, it's definitely a different feel.
Yeah. No. It's quite a venture that they've built. I was going to bring up with Don, and I will in the future, that there's a co-working space in Rochester that it'd be kind of cool to see if we could get some sort of a connection with, or maybe have them jointly hold an event or something. It's called Cube down in Rochester. Mm. And I learned more about it. I had heard of it, but I learned more about it yesterday at the Mini Analytics event. There were a bunch of people up from Mayo Clinic for the Mini Analytics event because it was life science focused this time. And, you know, close to 1,000 attendees and really an over-the-top event. Tremendous. I spent 12 hours there yesterday and want to thank the guys who pulled that together, and I helped them with the startup showcase track, which was a huge success. And we had a couple of great panels and 8 pitches and some really cool healthcare, mostly healthcare IT related startups pitched yesterday. So anyway, yeah, that was I'll put a link in to the show notes to the program. It was an amazing number of speakers, something like 60 speakers across, you know, I don't know, 8 or 10 breakout rooms, and you know, over 900 were registered, and I don't know what the final count was, I'll have to find out, but I think we had 180 on the wait list.
Oh, wow.
Towards the end. I don't know how many of those got in, but it was at the Optum campus on Technology Drive in Eden Prairie, and wonderful facility, really well done for a volunteer event. So hats off to Dan Atkins and Sean Larson and their whole team of volunteers for doing another great one.
What was one of your big takeaways from the event? Because, well, you know, when you talk about big data, it's like this big squishy thing, right?
Right. Well, it's all about, getting insights from the data. And it's not necessarily about big, huge data, you know. It's, you know, it's there's so much going on in this space and so many tools now that are becoming available to the average user. The creator of Hadoop was the keynoter, Doug Cutting, who is now the chief architect of Cloudera, which is the company that is commercializing Hadoop and one of the hottest companies in the valley. You know, he spoke of all the, you know, you used to have to be a Java programmer to use Hadoop. And there's a whole suite of different kinds of tools now that allow the ordinary old person, I guess, non-programmer to take advantage of the power of Hadoop, which is really positioned as the operating system for big data now. So it was really a coup that they were able to get Doug Cutting to come and speak. And there were so many sessions for data professionals or a lot of newbie kind of things. Like there was sort of a Hadoop 101 session and a bunch of others that were sort of introductory. And of course the makeup of the audience for this event is it tilts towards the Fortune 500 folks.
Sure.
So there were a ton of people there from, you know, Optima, obviously United Healthcare, Medtronic, Target, you know, all the universities in the state practically were represented there. And there were a bunch of really geeky presentations, which I didn't get to sit in on many presentations, to be quite honest, because I was so busy with the startup track and the panels that we did. But Donnie Burkholz was there, who's an analyst with RedMonk, and he commented, of course, he's extremely geeky data scientist guy, and he said, you know, there was a lot of really, really geeky stuff for him. It was, you know, he thought it was a lot of more introductory kind of stuff, but there's just so much interest in this space now, and you know, everybody's trying to hire people that can figure out these tools and help them get insights from all the huge amount of data that they have. You know, Mayo Clinic's got data on something like 5 million people, you know, patient data. When you start thinking about you know, the amount of data that these companies and organizations have to work with, but my biggest takeaway from the event is that, and I said this from the stage when I introduced the first panel, is that Mini Analytics has had this sort of vision of bringing together the Fortune 500 world with the startup world, and I think they've done it probably better than any other big event, you know, recurring event that I'm aware of, and it gets better every time. We, you know, we had more and more startup angels, you know, kind of folks attend this one than the last one or the one before. So in that respect, you know, there's a lot of interest from the Fortune 500 folks as, you know, as the economy goes more towards the free agent economy and right. The, you know, the startup economy. A lot of these Fortune 500 folks thinking, you know, I think I might want to do a startup someday, you know. And so we had this really cool panel right before lunch on, was called From Corporate Life, or the From Corporate World to Startup World: Issues, Challenges, and Personal Stories. And it was just fantastic. There were three guys that came out of the big company world, and they told it all. I mean, they laid it all out, you know, totally transparent. It was really, really a fun panel. And I couldn't believe that I looked around, and it was in the big room, which holds about 300, the auditorium over there. And it was mostly younger types that, you know, were just like, really riveted on what these guys were saying, you know, and you just got the feeling that, you know, they were either currently startup founders or they were corporate types that, you know, had ideas about maybe going off on their own someday. And the questions were just fantastic. And then, you know, later on in the afternoon, we had the pitches with a closing panel of angels that I recruited. And that was highly engaged. I mean, the folks were really highly engaged in that, and everybody seemed to think it was really, really a successful event. So, yeah, it was a heck of a day.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah, it was a busy week. There's no doubt about that. Oh, and, you know, it could easily slop into the weekend with two events going on today alone. So,
yeah. Wow.
Got kind of a little burst of everything going on.
Yeah, there has been a lot going on.
Yeah, we got more coming up next week, too.
Yep.
So did you guys hear about the layoffs at Target?
Yeah, I read about it.
Well, supposedly, because somebody said, and I'm not going to say who they are because they're my neighbor who actually works at Target Corporate, but that they were positioned around areas that are not growing anymore, areas that they're shrinking. And that
all the CD and DVD people are gone.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
Oh, I don't know. Again. I'm just saying that I can't imagine that that would be a growing part of their business.
No, not at all. Especially
you know, with the Blu-rays and CDs and stuff with all the electronic digital download services
and moving them over to the vinyl section.
right. No, I mean, there are categories within, you know, their product selection that are declining. And so I could see that there would be some need to move some people around. It's just too bad when you see this kind of thing.
Couldn't they move into like ladies' underwear or something? Or
yeah, that's an evergreen.
Right? Learn new skills. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, but you know,
that kind of begs the question: is what is a company like Target? You know, how are they going to evolve as technology evolves? Are they going to become more like a Best Buy? Which it seems like they're on that track because that's what Walmart's doing. You know, they're carrying more and more TVs and computers and iPhones and all that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, but Target's doing, you know, and harking back to Mini Analytics, you know, they're doing a lot of consumer health initiatives, or they're looking into a lot of things anyway. And you know, they've always been a very strong company in the analytics arena. And as I say, there were a bunch of them yesterday at this health-oriented analytics events. So that'll be interesting to watch. I mean, Best Buy kind of played at that for a while. Remember they had that sort of, what was it? Sort of a lifestyle fitness experiment with special standalone stores.
Oh yeah.
Remember that, Steve?
Yeah. Well, it was, they also carried, you know, they had aromatherapy stuff and
yeah, it was
meditation
weird
stuff. And yeah, well, they were trying to tap into a trend. So
yeah, it was in the fat years, and they didn't go forward with it. But Target is working on a lot of that kind of stuff. So, you know, they're a unique organization in that respect. I mean, they're not your typical retailer. You know, I doubt Walmart and Sears are working on that, but
probably not.
Sears is going towards more of an online operation, it sounds like, and maybe selling off some of the valuable real estate they have. And I saw an article saying, are they going, you know, trying to go up against Amazon, or what's going on here? So that'll be interesting to watch.
Wow. Well, and then our buddy Julio had a had an article about this company Mariner Software that has long sold something called Mac Gourmet. And frankly, I didn't even know that this company was in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, I've always known about the company, but I too, and their applications, but I didn't put together that they're local until I saw this piece this week. And I thought, wow, that's kind of weird, because you know, I've known these guys for years, I mean, through their apps, and didn't have any idea that they were local.
And so now they bought a company, or they did a deal with a company to basically take their content and turn it into apps for the iOS platform.
Yeah, they've always kind of done this mixture of their own internal app development for the Mac and now iOS and doing distribution for them and other companies. So it looks like they're trying to, you know, get a portfolio together of apps through acquisition. And through, you know, organic growth in internally.
Well, Phil, I don't know if you can talk about anything that's happening in the app space that might be something that you could disclose. But is there anybody that, I mean, are organizations doing this where they're doing deals with content companies to basically take what they have and turn it into apps? Are you seeing that?
No, not really. That's not what you're seeing. I mean, it's, you know, we are very active in, you know, building apps that extend services from companies that already exist, that are basically okay. allowing them to be, you know, an outgrowth of what they're already doing, whether that be online or, you know, in brick and mortar. So that's what we're doing the most of right now. And then also doing a lot of feed aggregation and things like that. For example, one of our clients is BuzzFeed. So we spend a great deal of time working on, you know, improving that ability that BuzzFeed has been very successful doing on the web and providing it online to you know, or on devices, whether it's a native app or what. So I suppose to some extent, yes, there is that bringing the content from online and providing it on a mobile device
okay.
in an application setting. So.
I'm mad at BuzzFeed, by the way.
Why are you mad at BuzzFeed?
Well,
now?
Because when I get a link...
Because there are many reasons to be, if you
well,
really
if
want.
I get if I get a link and I actually go to an article
yeah.
and then I scroll down, then they have recommended things to look at. And
so before you know
sometimes
it,
I'm compelled to look at the recommended articles, and then I look at one and then I'll get down to the bottom of that and I'll look at another one, and it's not fair because I know the tricks.
The secret of BuzzFeed. Not so secret. Yeah. I, you
it's
know,
like
I,
junk food. It, junk food for your brain.
Honest to God, it is. It is. It's it like is. when I walk into my hairstylist, you know, when I get my hair cut, and I can catch up on People and Cosmopolitan and all the magazines sitting there.
And I tell you that they churn out a lot of content, and it is a challenge from a perspective of the developers as the developers to make sure that
sure.
we handle the volume of consumption and the volume of supply. It's an amazing amount of stuff coming out of that. And I've always been a big fan of BuzzFeed because they kind of took the whole I don't know, aggregation of everything that is, you know, Hollywoody or, you know, pop culture and really kind of built on that. They're not just regurgitating news stories and aggregating news stories. They're also building their own, you know, they're building lists and, you know, keying off of what's popular and providing that list and that video clips and you know, yeah. the big users. They're huge users of the animated GIF.
Yeah, they are. Well, and now I don't know if you've seen, but there are a lot of tools out that will take frames from your video mm-hmm. on your smartphone and turn it into a GIF.
Yeah.
So
is it a GIF or a GIF? What is it? GIF
well,
or GIF?
The remember we went through this a few shows ago.
Yeah, it depends on what side of the river you are on. Right. The East Coast has a different than the West Coast, apparently.
Well, the guy that invented the format said it was GIF.
I thought it was the Minnesota River you were speaking of.
No, the Mississippi River. You know, where it's W on one side and K on the other?
Yeah, exactly. That's a radio reference for all you kids out there.
It has the same deal, right? Why is that, Phil? Why is there the W and the K? What's the deal with that?
Because back in the day, you know, it goes way back. I'm not really sure.
This sounds like a rat hole.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it just.
All right.
It is what it is. And there are instances of it not necessarily being that way, but they've sort of been phased out. I mean, it's one of those, you know, nobody uses their call letters anymore anyway. So it's a fairly moot point. You know your station by a name, not necessarily.
Hey, WCCO, come on.
Okay, there are those.
this is a funny market because
for you know, us oldsters,
it was all W's, right? And we lived right. in the West Coast, all K's. Here, they're mixed because you've got you know both sides of the Mississippi.
Depends on where the tower is, not where the radio station is.
Yes. You know, so I have to ask you guys a question, and this is a question also for the
why did you want
for the listeners
the world of radio?
Yeah, because seriously. Graham, you mentioned Earl Bakken earlier in his yep. garage, or maybe Don Ball did. He brought it up.
I used to work for the man.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
so
early in my career. So I know the photo he's talking about.
Got it.
The whole deal. Yeah.
Well, if you've not been to this thing that I'm going to mention, you really owe it to yourself to go. because it's an experience and it's really fun to see all the stuff. And it's the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting.
Oh, yeah. Great place.
In St. Louis Park. It's over by the Target and Byerly's in St. Louis Park, right off Highway 136th Street. And it's kind of back in the in a industrial area, but the stuff that's in there is just phenomenal.
I thought you were going to bring up the Bakken Museum of Electricity.
Well,
and
there's
Life.
That too, and
on the what is it on Lake Calhoun on the west side, in that unbelievable mansion. Old mansion. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, they wouldn't absolutely. Be too far from each other. A person could go out and tour both of those in the same day.
Easily.
They'd be about 2 miles apart.
Well, so we tried it this summer where we played tourist in our own city. And we went to the James J. Hill Mansion, and we went to the St. Paul Cathedral, and, you know, acted as though we were touring the Twin Cities for the first time. And
had his Bermuda shorts on and black socks. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Indeed.
Yep. My Looney Tunes boxer shorts. Oh, God.
Well, hey, anyway. Your little propeller beanie.
There we go. Hey, let's talk about just a few more things here. I don't know if you guys...
You got to talk about the attack on privacy, right?
I just have to mention it. That Google changed their terms of service so that your...
Bastards.
Your profile name and your photo and... what you say or review about a product or service will include, it'll show up in advertising and so forth unless you opt out. And
what I don't like about this is that you have to go in and opt out. I mean, if they want to do this, that's fine. And Facebook had the same sort of thing a while back, right?
Yeah, that's Facebook style.
It is. I mean, it's very presumptuous, and most people won't even know how to opt out unless they go to this link that you've put in the show notes.
Yeah.
I just went and I turned mine off so you won't see my smiling face recommending anything. But they should do it the other way, where you have to opt into it. Of course, no one's going to do that. But, you know,
well, like
that's what's galling about it.
Well, if I didn't opt out, what would I be up there for? If I've done a blog post on something,
if you rate an app or you do something on various sites where you rate or you put a review out in an ad, it'll say Graham Thickens recommends Dusty's Donut Shop.
So my two Yelp reviews could show up there. Yes. I've only done two, and they were both extremely negative reviews.
I can't imagine.
That's all I've ever done on Yelp.
So what?
But I was so pissed off.
And Graham, Yelp so appreciates the fact that you only bitch.
So, I know. That's not right.
Well, wait a second. Guys, all I have to say, though, that it's only stuff that you've... reviews you've shared on Google Plus or ads that you've plus oned. So it's really Google Plus centric.
Well, nobody uses Google Plus anyway, so why is this a big issue? No, I'm kidding.
I know.
No, you're not kidding. I agree.
I only remember to use it like maybe once a month. And it's like, oh, yeah, I should post. I don't know.
I'm the same way. Yes. Well, you know, they want everybody to come in and use the user interface, but if they would just simply allow other ways to publish content, because there are times when, you know, if I do the Minivate Gang podcast post, there's automated ways to have that push to Twitter and to Facebook, but I can't push to, I have to do it manually in Google Plus.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I mean, come on, guys. I know you want to be your own silo and your own social network, but people are not going to switch. So you better open up.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Cause I don't remember to go there often enough to manually post stuff.
Yeah. I mean, qualitatively, the posts that I get from the people I'm connected to are phenomenal.
On
Google Plus. And it's, you know, I've got my tabs open in my Chrome browser and go to them all the time, but, so I mean, I'm in there fairly often, but I don't post very often. So
we know that too.
Hey, so
I've got a question for Steve.
Yes.
So on your 5S, are you noticing this crash rate that's been reported?
Not at all.
As far as apps are crashing twice as often, according to All Things D.
Well,
and these are not like some troll site here. This is, you know, the real deal.
No, I'm seeing nothing.
So it's the same as the 4S that you had before. I mean, for me it is.
And it's, you know, I probably got about 400 apps on my phone. And I find that
really? It's like, really?
I know
that's why you have, that's just, why you have a 64 gigger, right?
Exactly. But, the update, the automatic update is set up so that it'll automatically just update my apps. And so right. I just went in there, just yesterday and saw that there were 56 apps that were updated since I've, gotten my 5S, and that's been like 2 weeks.
Wow.
So they're automatically updating. And I think that is the issue, that the developers are behind the curve. So some of the apps are crashing.
Because of that automatic updating?
No, because they haven't updated the app yet.
Oh, okay. So that would make logical sense.
Yeah, kind of sort of works, but you know, it's going to take time, but it'll get there. But I've literally had nothing crash on me, so that's pretty amazing. Knock on wood.
So, Graham, did you get a new one, or are you
not
still
quite?
Waiting?
I've been so freaking busy, I haven't had a chance to go into the Apple Store and trade in my 4S, which I pretty much have to go into the store to do that to get my best buck for it, I think, and I just haven't had time. But
oh, man, I used Gazelle for the first time.
Oh, did you?
And I got $210 for my. My 4S, and I found
out
later.
Yeah, but that's it's a 64 gig or a 32.
It's 64.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably could have gotten more just selling it on Craigslist.
Oh, I'm sure I could have. But
I mean,
if it was unlocked,
it's a hassle. Well, you can get it unlocked. Yeah. You just go through the process at AT&T.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. Right? I just didn't want to futz with it. I just got too much going on right now, so. It's kind of a hassle to
do Craigslist. But, you know, I was thinking, Steve, I could walk into the Apple Store and get 150 for my 16 gig. I better be able to. It's in really great shape.
Hey, you should check out the deal that Best Buy's got going, because they've got a smartphone trade-in thing. Yeah, at least 100 and up to, what, 250, I think, or 300?
Well, that's what my daughter told me, that if I'd waited, I could have gotten 230 from Best Buy.
Oh, wow. Hey, maybe I will get.
So, yeah.
Maybe I can get 180 for mine then or something.
Yep.
It's worth the try.
You might, yeah. Just check it out.
So, yeah, I definitely will.
Say, by the way, I just want to mention something about our pals at SmartThings. And I think I mentioned it to you, Phil, but there's been one app. I even tried writing my own, but it didn't work anyway. because I have a developer account at SmartThings, but the one thing that I cared about was I wanted to replace my digital timers that turn lights on, because, you know, as the time changes during the day, you know, when it gets darker earlier, you want to be able to just change everything at once. Right. Mm-hmm. And the one app I wanted was something that would turn on at a specific time and turn off at a specific time. And then I could set the devices that I wanted to go on and off. And they had an app, but in the 4S, if you set the on time, you could click the done button, but then if you went to the off time, there was no done button. So you could set the time, but the app would freeze. And so I sent a thing to support, and we went back and forth. Well, they just updated the app, works perfectly. They've added a bunch of other features. And I was so impressed that I went to Amazon and I bought four more switches or lamp modules. And I bought a water sensor, and now I'm going to buy some switches, light switches to install. And I am so impressed by where they are, because right now it's ready for prime time. Right now they could sell it at Best Buy. And when you put this thing in here, Tim, about Nest gives the lowly smoke detector a brain.
It's like a $130 smoke detector, though. Can you imagine?
No, well, it's a CO2 as well, but.
There you go. That's worth it then, definitely.
Well, and it'll be going down. The price will go down over time.
Well, read that article, because they really put a lot of work into the psychology around the specific voices that they're using and everything. It's very interesting. But
it sounds elegant. It really does.
I think only Steve is the one that would plunk down $130 for each of them. I mean, because you've got at least, what, three or four of them in the house, right?
What?
The normal house has three or four smoke detectors.
No, after we had our lower level redone and built out, the code now is there has to be one in every room. So I came home, and the electrician had gone around and stuck them in every room. You know, just bolted them in. And of course, they're all battery. None of them are electrical. So I got to change the frickin' 9-volt batteries in about 87 smoke detectors, CO2 detectors.
Well, how about this Nest one, Tim? Can that be a wired or a battery powered, or is it only battery powered?
No, it's both. So you could do a hardwire if you prefer.
Yeah, that would be the only way I would do it. I've got one on each level.
But they're $130 each. So
I wouldn't buy all three. I might try one on one level, you know, and see how I like it or something, you know.
Did you know the NSA can track you when you do that?
Oh, sorry.
Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention was when I was in the Apple store the other day, I was actually returning a case that I'd purchased because, Tim, thank you for the MonoPrice lead, because I bought all kinds of stuff, lightning cables and everything else from MonoPrice. I love these guys. But anyway,
yeah, no, there's good quality stuff.
Really good. It's super cheap. I mean, I bought a $7 iPhone case. It's the best one I've ever had. But anyway, the thing that kind of blew me away was all of the Internet of Things type devices that are in the Apple store. So the Philips Hue bulbs, the Wemo stuff from, is it Logitech? Or I think
it's Belkin.
It's Belkin. Belkin. Yeah. And then the Nest stuff. And remember my prediction in December that for 2013 that Apple would get into the Internet of Things? I think I was a year early because I don't think they're ready yet. And now I've been reading about how their new iWatch, people are speculating that because of Bluetooth low energy, the Bluetooth 4, that the watch will be able to control things in the house. And that's when Apple will get into the business.
Cool.
Yeah. Who knows?
Love it.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you've got quite an investment, though, in the SmartThings ecosystem already, Steve, right? I mean, you've spent several $100s on all these sensors and whatnot.
Yeah, probably $400.
So switching to an Apple ecosystem would, you know, not necessarily be something you'd look at.
Yeah, but here's the good news. The good news is that the switches and all that stuff are all open standards. They're Z-Wave. So I'm assuming Apple's not going to have their own protocol. But of course, who knows?
Oh, I would assume that they would have their own protocol.
Listen to you.
Well, yeah, aren't these protocols or is it the protocols that are sort of competing? I mean, you've got Z-Wave and what are the other ones?
Well, you've got Bluetooth, obviously, but the mesh networks are Z-Wave and...
What about Zigbee? Or is that a different...
Yeah, Zigbee thing? Is another one.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't SmartThings have to support multiple?
Yes. They do.
That's how they make it smart. Is their hub supports all these.
Right.
Okay. Remember, it's the Babelfish of home automation.
Right. Well, and then you've got all these new standards like MQTT, the messaging, queuing, telemetry, transport, and it's there are companies that are really trying to grab the platform space. So that they're the software system in the cloud that will control everything and support everything. And so that the smart things of the future, those kind of startups and companies will use their platform instead of trying to do it on their own. And so it's there's a lot of jockeying for position because it's the whole space is heating up pretty dramatically.
Sounds like smart things is nicely positioned though.
Oh yeah. Because they're early on.
And you know, I had to laugh, talk about Ben. You know, he apparently moved to, you know, Washington, D.C., but he's back here in Minneapolis a fair amount. So this is Ben Edwards, and he was at Mini Demo the other night, of course. But did you see where he was also speaking or on a panel at the Collaborative Venture Finance Conference?
Oh, no, I didn't
laugh
see that.
When I saw the lineup, you know, because it's the blue suit crowd, you know, and here's Ben right smack in the middle of it. And I thought, oh, yeah, I guess SmartThings has gone big time when he's at the Collaborative Venture Finance Conference.
Oh, how funny.
So, yeah, That was Thursday, an event I didn't catch. So yeah, that even added to the event, crazy event week.
Yep.
This last week.
Well, let's
so before we get into events, upcoming events, I've got a quick Android tip for those of us that use Android. Like, so that's Phil and I on the call.
That's us. Yes.
I'm sure there's a listener here or there. If you go out to your you know convenience store or to Walmart, Target, whatever, and you get a Kit Kat bar that's marked with the Android logo, and you put it in, you'll get $5 credit on the Play Store. Oh. So you have to buy a Kit Kat bar. They're 79 cents, depending on where you go. And if you redeem the code, it's $5 the first time you do it.
Oh, so, just the first time? Because otherwise, boy, Tim, you're going to get really fat.
No, I know. No. It only works the first time. And then after that, there are various things you can get.
But so you have to buy the Kit Kat bar? You can't just scan the outside label or something like that?
No, it's inside the wrapper.
Oh, it's inside the wrapper.
You have to enjoy the fine Kit Kat.
I'm not above that. I would be glad to enjoy a fine Kit Kat.
I mean, you get it's like getting $4+ to get stuff on the Play Store. So
well, there you
music
go.
Or video or what have you, or apps.
Yeah. I'm up for it.
I'm going to use it for apps. Yeah, so that's the quick Android tip.
And it's a tasty treat.
It's been one.
So if you kids are looking for a place to go on Halloween, then and you have an Android phone, go to the Elliott House.
That's right.
Yeah, right. I'm going to be giving out 79-cent Kit Kat bars to every kid that comes here.
But he's actually giving out $5.79.
But only if they show their Android phone.
Yes, you'll have to scan your QR code at the door.
Yeah, that's your trick.
Well, listen, we probably ought to make sure you check out the list of events that are coming up, and we'll talk about them and other things in innovation and technology here in the land of 10,000 lakes next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
Like this before.